Hello and welcome to Politics and Science. I'm your host, John Barkhausen. And this week, as promised, we're going to take a look at our democracy, the greatest democracy on earth. However, the Help America Vote Act passed overwhelmingly in 2002, ushered in a new era of voting machines, a new generation, all computerized, all with proprietary software so that nobody really knows how the votes are being tabulated exactly. And as we're going to hear in the upcoming testimony of Stephen Spoonermore, who's an IT computer and systems security expert to the stars. He works for the Defense Department. He works for all the major banks to keep your credit card secure. These machines have the security of a museum display computer. Their architecture is not designed to prevent hacking. So the short version of this show is our election process is wide open to hacking by anybody, by either Democrat or Republican or a third party or by another country or, as Stephen Spoonermore says, a bunch of smart high school kids from Brazil who are looking for a challenge. I know it sounds like a conspiracy theory, but gosh, nobody would ever want to steal an election, would they? I mean, there's really nothing to gain by putting your candidate in the White House. You could never get any laws passed to save you billions of dollars or get involved in some wars that you want to sell weapons for. I mean, that could never happen. But strangely, some people are worried about it. I was looking at a website called the Velvet Revolution that my friend Marge Kehoe tipped me off to. And although I don't know much about the Velvet Revolution, they seem to be a bunch of people who are worried about the veracity of our election process. And last month, this is written, I think, before this most current presidential election. This is November 2012, about November the 20th. And this I'm reading now from the velvetrevolution.us. Last month, we offered $1 million reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of anyone who rigged a federal election on November 6th. We urge computer experts to contact us with information about any election manipulation of the tabulation results. We received a letter. On November 12th, we received a letter from the Protectors, that's in quotes, of the Protectors, apparently a group of white hat cyber sleuths, mentioning our reward and stating that 2 months ago, they began monitoring the digital traffic of one Karl Rove, a disrespecter of the rule of law, knowing that he had claimed to be a kingmaker while grifting vast wealth from the barons who gladly handed him gold to anoint another king while looking the other way. That was a quote. The Protector said that they had identified the digital structure of Rove's operation and of Orca, a Republican get-out-the-vote software application. After finding open doors in the Orca systems, they created a password-protected firewall called the Great Oz and installed it on servers that Rove planned to use on election night to reroute and change election results from three states. The letter indicated that, quote, Orca Killer was launched at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and the Great Oz at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on November 6th. The Protectors watched as Orca crashed and failed throughout Election Day. They watched as Rove's computer techs tried 105 times to penetrate the Great Oz using different means and passwords. Finally, they issued the following warning to Rove. Don't do it again, or they would turn over the evidence to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. And the Velvet Revolution says, we are not in a position to vouch for the contents of this letter any more than we can vouch for the video by Anonymous warning Karl Rove not to rig the election. However, we can analyze that content under the prism of Mr. Rove's history and facts over the past few weeks. We do so in the hope that this will lead to an investigation of Mr. Rove's entire operation, a la General David Petraeus. In that spirit, we provided this information to the FBI prior to publication and followed up after publication. For years, we have campaigned for a complete investigation of Mr. Rove, and we have provided extensive legal memos and evidence to the FBI to support such an investigation. And they have a link to their documents supporting that. We urge others who have information about election tampering or other criminal violations by Mr. Rove, including violations of campaign finance laws, to provide that evidence to the FBI. We also urge people who gave money to Mr. Rove and his organizations to contact the FBI if they were misled, promised things that did not happen, or were otherwise defrauded. And the Velvet Revolution goes on. Karl Rove has a history of rigging elections going back several decades, including in 2004 when he orchestrated a man-in-the-middle attack to change the votes in Ohio. And that is what the subject of the show will be, is Stephen Spoonamore talking about how that was done. The article goes on, but I'm going to stop there and play you the warning by Anonymous that said that they would be monitoring Rove's computer election hacking efforts in this election. And perhaps that is why Karl Rove was so upset this November 6th, when he could not believe that Ohio was going against Mitt Romney, because after all, he knew something, perhaps, that the rest of us did not know. So here's the group called Anonymous with their warning to Karl Rove.
Karl Rove, American Crossroads. We are Anonymous. We are watching you. We know that you will attempt to rig the election of Mitt Romney to your favor. We will watch as your merry band of conspirators try to achieve this overthrow of the United States government. We see that you have taken steps to ensure that this election race is a close race so you can step in and rig the numbers to elect your candidate, and then claim because it was a tight race that your candidate was able to narrowly squeak ahead and win. We want you to know that we are watching you, waiting for you to make the mistake of thinking you can rig this election to your favor. We want you to know that if we catch you, we will turn over all of this data to the appropriate officials in the hopes that you will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. We are watching and monitoring all of your servers. We are watching traffic on each of them for anything suspicious. You will not get away with any fraud without consequences. We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Expect us.
Wow, pretty dramatic stuff. Love that music. So now we're going to go to Stephen Spoonamore, and as I mentioned before, he's a lifelong Republican and is the IT security expert, works for the military, U.S. military, works for banks and governments around the world. For the banks, he secures little details like all of our credit cards so that they don't get stolen on a daily basis. And he's one smart dude, and he's going to tell us about how our new electronic voting system works. But first, I extend a big thank you to the Velvet Revolution. You can Google them and find their website. And in case you didn't know, the Velvet Revolution is a nonprofit activist organization that supports progressive politics, peace and justice, media reform, election reform, among other causes. And you can find out more about them at Velvet Revolution. Now, here's lifelong Republican and IT expert Stephen Spoonamore.
Well, a lot of people think of the world in terms of their roadmaps. I think of the world in terms of its digital architecture. So if you've ever seen that picture that looks like sort of a crazy colored starburst of basically all the fiber optics and connectivity of the world, I can kind of, you know, see that in my head. And so when I'm dealing with someone, I think, okay, what's the connectivity between here and there, and what could they attack me with given that connectivity? Small pipes, high safety. Big pipes, be careful. I am a serial entrepreneur. I've actually built a number of companies. I have actually built and sold companies that involve digital watermarking, image compression, high-speed image transmission, image switching, satellite transmission systems, fiber optic relay systems, digital television studios, Granite, actually. I had a brief foray into industrial minerals. And then most recently, I've built two companies, most recently Cybrinth LLC, which was sold to Duos Tech Corporation. And that company focused on a series of patents I got around how to deal with risk managing a net-centric operation. So if you're moving huge amounts of data across a network, what are the risks associated with it? How do you measure it, and how do you control those risks? And currently, I'm now a partner in a Global Strategic Partners, which is a pretty full-services, full-spectrum solvent company. A lot of high-end guys, interesting folks, and I'm the IT geek among the partners. All the other partners have other specialties, but they decided they wanted to add a partner, and they're all Republicans, so I guess I still have some bona fides left. As a Republican, yes, I grew up in a moderately conservative military family, but a sort of family that, I actually carry around a frickin' copy of the Constitution with me. It's short, by the way. If you haven't read it, it's only about that thick, so it's easy to read. Bill of Rights gets a little longer if you really want to get into it. How they sold it, and this is what's interesting, the Federalist Papers are actually 35 times longer than the Constitution, but we had to write the marketing document to sell the product. So anybody who doesn't understand the business is 5% product and 95% marketing, same thing had to happen to build the country. So I'm that sort of old school New England or Rockefeller Republican, and needless to say, the core of the party today doesn't really know what to do with that. Although the core seems to be shrinking so far that now the people like Howard Dean, who used to be a Republican, who left and went to the other party, are sort of beginning to look around and, you know, where do the Mike Bloombergs go? Where do people like me go in the party at this point? But I think after the thumping that the more conservative wing has taken recently, there's a chance that they're going to start realizing that maybe becoming even more conservative might be a less good choice, but who knows. But that's the background, that's the core of it. And then, yes, I never intended to sort of become a spokesmodel for voting integrity. Was not the intent. But the core of how I got involved with this is that in 1998, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth digitally, there was a company that had another famous documentary called Startup.com was made called GovWorks. And GovWorks had the vision that they were going to raise tons of money and become an all-services provider for everything you ever need to build government solutions. The CTO, Greg Carson, was a friend of mine, and the chief of operations, Patrick Comer, was a friend of mine. And so they invited me to come and look at the stuff they were working on. And at one of these conferences, and I believe it was November of 98, or just might have been January 99, they had the future of voting as this presentation, and they had these touchscreen machines. And I just started laughing. I mean, they claimed they were a technology company, but really, remember, it's 5% product, 95%. They had 95% of guys doing a lot of marketing, but they really didn't have much technology, which is why the company blew up. You got to have the 5% before you market it. They just went straight to the marketing. I saw the machine, and basically, Greg Carson, who, very accomplished guy, and myself, and another guy who was there on his staff, I don't remember his name, we hacked into it in less than 20 minutes. We're playing with the results, changed the code around, and I basically said, this is absurd. I said, you have an unauditable touchscreen system with unauditable code that talks through a bus system that is then communicating to, at that time, a already out-of-date in 1998 Windows CE platform, which was written basically as an educational simplification Windows platform in the mid-90s. I said, Windows is going to stop support. Microsoft is going to stop supporting this. The Georgia ballots this year in 2008 that have now apparently lost 20% of the voters' ballots, or who knows what the hell happened in Georgia this year, or they're swearing again in Brooklyn. That's the same software. It's the same Windows CE and bunk stack. The stack is all the layers of things. Just in 1998, looking at this first, what was then Global Election Systems, which was then later bought by Diebold, which has now been sold by Diebold, that same piece of junk that we hacked into in 20 minutes in 1998 is still being used in numerous states across the country. It's junk. That's what it is. It's junk computers. They're fine if you want to set up, say, if you had an aquarium and you wanted to have fish appear and have kids identify which fish it is, and then, you know, you wouldn't really care if they hacked and made the goldfish call the piranha and the piranha call the goldfish, because who cares if a kid did that? Those machines should be used for that extremely valuable purposes of children's education in aquariums, or museums, kindergartens, but they should not be used for anything integral to national voting. There it is.
So in addition to, you know, the ethical and political implications of this, you have concerns about this as a national security.
Well, that's what I've said. So coming away from this, this thing in 98, now remember, this is a mindset where in 1998, you know, the Clintons in the White House, this product is there, this guy is selling it. And I actually was, Bob Yurasevich was there at this event himself. And I said, at that time, I said, this is a national security threat. I said, you want to actually deploy this? I said, all I got to do is have one smart Russian hacker insert a piece of code. And he went, oh, no, this is how they audit, this is how they set it up. And he tried to explain to me how you protect these things. I'm like, I know how county government works. I said, because at that time we were building products to sell to county governments for one of my other divisions of the company. I said, somewhere there's going to be a snowplow shed that they're going to put a closet in the back of it. And if they've got to take 500 of these machines, that closet is going to be full of these things, and they're going to sit there for a year, and then they're going to drag them out a year later and dust them off and try and power them up, and some of them will work, some of them won't work. It'll be so easy to get access to these. And he says, well, yes, but you'd be, he says, we're going to recommend that they wipe the drives each time and totally install new software. I said, great, won't happen. Won't happen. The reality of how people use a computer, it just isn't realistic that the procedures that they say will lead to secure voting, which means totally, bizarrely, maybe partially stopping from some hacking voting, that's the best you can get with these. And so they have all these recommendations that I don't know anybody who follows it correctly, period. If there are, bless it to you, you have an amazing group, and that probably means you're spending 10 times what it would cost you to run each election if you just printed a damn paper ballot and kept it for a month and then burned it. Because there's some things, as a technologist, I mean, you know, earlier we were talking about the fact that I like Amish technology. I'm somewhat of a Luddite. I have no television in my home. I have computers because I work on computers, but I don't actually think some technologies work well. I think the technologies that work well are appropriately scaled for the task. So if somebody came up to me and said, you know, Lamborghini is coming out with the most amazing minivan, and it, there's no room for a car seat, but you can get a couple bags of groceries in the back, but it'll do 230 miles an hour as a minivan, it's amazing. You'd be like, maybe there's a guy in Italy who really has to have it, and there's one sale. But I'd go like, there's a purpose for a minivan. And there may, for some people's perspective, be a purpose of a Lamborghini, but there really is no purpose in using a minivan as a Lamborghini. There's no point in this. Technology, computers are evil, horrific nightmares. They are stupid, stupid, stupid machines that don't understand anything, but they never forget anything, and even worse, they'll do exactly what the programmer tells them to do. But that isn't always obvious to the user. So a person who's a user at the surface level of a keyboard and a computer is having one experience, but deep inside the computer, that computer can be doing a whole lot of things that you don't know about, that the programmer told it to do, that you may or may not approve of. Voting is a very simple process. It is a process of walking up and making a decision between two, three, four candidates or on a number of issues and checking some boxes. That is best dealt with the simplest technology to address it, and that would be paper and a pen. The moment you add any other technology to it, you're instantaneously adding these layers that need expertise. Now, people go, well, you know, we have these very responsible people at boards of elections, and they do. They're as honest as the day is long. Most people work incredibly hard, and most of them maybe, if we're lucky, had one community college computer course, and sometimes they can get Excel to work. That's it. That's who they are. And that's fine, which means that they are in charge of making sure these very, very poorly designed machines all work correctly, which is hard enough for them, And then, if they're up against a guy like me, who could walk in with a thumbstick and in 6 seconds change the guts of that machine and what it's doing, they don't stand a prayer. They don't. And there's lots of guys like me out there. Back in 98, actually, one of the arguments Bob Yurisevich made to me, he says, well, I appreciate what you guys just did, but there's like all of 10 of you in the whole world. I'm like, today? But it's just...
Can you mention who Bob is?
Bob Yurisevich. The Yurisevich brothers, there are actually several of them, but they founded ES&S, or co-founded ES&S. And they went around to try and sell ES&S voting technology, but because most of it was being sold to governments, they couldn't sell it because they were the only ones with electronic voting technology, so they had to have someone to bid against. So one of the brothers, Bob, left ES&S and set up another company called Global Election Systems. So then Global would then, so the two brothers would bid against each other, so you had different people owning the companies, right? And interestingly, you know, all of the tabulators in Northern Florida in 2000 were Bob Yurisevich's toys. So mm-hmm. He's an interesting cat. I hope he's doing very well. A very devout man.
Can we talk about that part?
People always think I have no tinfoil and I don't wear tinfoil. But unfortunately, the reality is a lot of the people that are involved in the voting machine world, certainly when it started, they're okay technicians. They're not great. They hire a couple of guys who are pretty good as well. So it's not that the programs can't work if they're done correctly, but the ownership who had the drive to do this are all from the deep, deep fundamentalist believer community. Now, there's nothing wrong with the deep fundamentalist believer community. Again, I love the Amish. I live in a mostly Amish community. And they're deep believers. And I have my own deep beliefs. But most people like me who are involved in computers, there's not a lot of people that view themselves as Christians first and computer programmers second. I don't know anybody at the high end who thinks of themselves that way, except for the people who own voting machine companies. So they sort of have this, they all donate to one party and only to the extreme wing of that party, which is my party, but the extreme wing who hates me. And I doubt that they're truthful about their intent with the machines. I mean, I appreciate that, but there's sort of an unfortunate reality that on some of the more fundamentalist Christian components today, and now we're way off computers, but it relates back to what we're doing, they actually don't think it's wrong to lie to the unbelievers as long as you're working toward a greater truth for God. So if they believe that by controlling the vote, they can save the babies by packing the Supreme Court, which I am convinced this is how this all started. They got the idea of going, we have to get the true believers in office. We can't seem to get them elected. So let's follow Stalin's advice. As Stalin said, you who have the vote have no control. He who controls the vote has all the control. Or some approximate translation from Russian. And so they're like, let's build the vote tabulators. And then they got down the tabulator thing, and they also said, well, what if we could also control the voting machine so that you could erase the ballot? I don't think they initially thought about hacking the touchscreens. They just didn't want to have a paper trail. It's like, the hacking is mostly done at the tabulator level. It's not, you can hack a voting machine, but you got to hack a lot of voting machines to be effective in most cases, because if the population is moving in one direction by 2%, you got to figure a way to hack 70, 80, 90 machines, quite a lot minimum, to have an impact. You can do it, but it's a lot of work. But all you do is hack one tabulator at the state level, or four or five tabulators at the county level. Or as I believed in Ohio, you can, you know, control some number of tabulators from a man in the middle.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk more about man in the middle, please?
Sure. There's a lot of ways a computer network can work. Should we go to the whiteboard for a second? All right, we're going to go to the whiteboard for a second. I'm going to talk about a basic computer network and draw here for a second. We're going to go ahead and first we're going to talk about, nobody likes having their credit card stolen, so I'm going to talk, most of the work that I do is defending your credit card. So if you have a credit card and it wasn't stolen today, you're welcome. So what happens is you have a called a POS, or a point of sale machine. And that POS basically has a little swipe thing in it, and you come up and you know you swipe your card and the card goes through and then you punch in a keypad. Well, then this is hooked by a wire to a cash register, and there's a person standing there looking at it, right? So these two things are part of the network. Then this is hooked to a server. Now, there's a bunch of these. So you're there, let's say I'm visiting Walmart that day. I go to Walmart, and I'm going to buy groceries and my other stuff. So I've gone, I pay for my credit card or my debit card, either one, and those are, they're two different functions that happen there. And each of these checkout aisles are part of a network, each with their own POS, working their way along. But all of them will feed into a central charge recovery computer, or a CSERC, we call it. So there at the store, you've got your central charge. Basically, it takes all the charges in there and batches them together. And as a general rule, they don't settle everything right away. They keep the stuff in there to settle in sort of batches, depending on what bank they're hooked to. Walmart's its own bank. So, but what they do do is they send out these little pulsed requests that then go out to a phone switch. So now I'm down the block somewhere at a phone switch. Now we've got a big map of the Great Lakes up here. I'm at the local phone switch. Well, that local phone switch then hooks to a bigger phone switch. So now I'm at some giant, I've gone from the PBX, now I'm at some big phone switch. Now this phone switch then eventually goes to a big, huge room with a big optical switch. Now I'm at the opto switch, and now I'm inside of a fiber optic cable. And there's billions and billions of pieces of data, and it eventually goes to another fiber optic cable, then down another PBX, and then to another thing. And eventually it finds its way to some box. And that box is the box that has your information about your credit card. And all this happens in a second. So this thing goes, bing, 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 bing. Is this person got a real account? Yes. Or, right? Bing, 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 bing. And it goes, credit charge approved. Right? On average, when you swipe your card in the United States, 36 computers are involved in the process for one credit card swipe. So when people ask me what I, you know, do, cause I've had some people recently going, you're just so obsessed with this voting. I go, no, actually, I just spend a few hours a month on voting, really. Generally, every 2 years in November, I predict how to steal the election, and then laugh about I'm usually right. This is what I spend my time doing. Because all of these things in between, every single step in this process, I have found thieves in. Every single one. In Phuket, Thailand, we blew out engineers who had an optical switch who were duplicating things. Just last month, we blew out a gang who had put extra circuit boards inside of this to steal them right at a bunch of stores in Belgium and London. A few months before that, we blew out a group that had compromised cash registers. We've blown out employees who are copying this data. We've blown out people who are working at the bank who added code to steal it there. It's like, there is no part of this system that we have not found thieves stealing or changing data. None. And it amounts to millions of dollars a day that we lose. Now, all around the world, there are thousands of qualified, highly driven, and very good professionals like myself trying really hard to allow your credit card to work. And most days, we win. And occasionally, now, you know, let's go even to the next step, right? So now let's take what we do to stop a thief. So if we're trying to stop a thief, so I've made my credit card charge here, and now my credit card charge is traveling through the system, going through 36 computers. That goes very fast here because it's the speed of light. Then we're back into copper here. Now let's all of a sudden, this computer that asks, are you real, then says, huh. And the computer equivalent of huh would be, it asks you real, go, well, that's a real account, but Bob Smith's never been to the Walmart in Oklahoma before. So the huh of the computer then triggers a whole other bunch of computers. And these computers are what I spend most of my time designing. And these are fraud detection computers. So now let's say you live in Long Island, and someone has stolen your credit card and sold it to a guy who's made a white card copy. He's taken an old hotel key like this. This is actually a hotel key that's been converted into a credit card by a thief. So this is called a three-track MAG code. And he stole the data, used an encoder that he probably bought on eBay for $50, and turned what looks like a Hyatt or, you know, Westin key in his pocket, but this is actually a phony credit card now. He's run the phony credit card, we call this a white card fraud, through a machine, hoping to get away with a single charge. Hoping that this computer won't say, huh, but will say, okay, that could be risky. If they see two or three huhs in a row, they'll definitely say something. Sometimes on the first huh, they're like, okay, there's something odd going on, the person's on a business trip or something, we won't bother them. The computer doesn't make a decision, but the programmer has to make a decision about this. But if the computer says, huh, then all of a sudden my computers come into play. And my computers then say, what is the person's buying pattern? What is the person's age? Where is this person doing? This is definitely out of program. And then what happens is you're sitting there and your phone rings. You're in Long Island and your phone rings. You go, hello. And there's a nice person on the phone. And by the way, now this data has gone from Oklahoma through to your bank in Long Island into some of one of several farms where our fraud computers are, who've now sent a signal with some of the information to South Dakota. And now we're over in South Dakota at a fraud call center where there's some in Ohio as well. People with nice Midwestern voice gets on the phone and goes, hello, Mr. Smith, this is your credit card company. And they're not from the credit card company, they're from the fraud outsource company, but they know what credit card is and know what name to say, and they have a script. I said, are you standing in the Walmart in Oklahoma City buying? And if you go, yes, I am, they go, well, that's wonderful, and they click yes. Now a human decision about fraud has been made. And if you go, no, I'm in Long Island, they go, no. And then this cashier then has their manager come over and we try and arrest the guy. Right? Who's doing that with voting machines? Nobody. If anyone is in this process, and trust me, there are people who want to be in this process. If anyone's willing to spend $1 billion on a 2-year campaign to win an election, spending a couple million bucks to intercept the system and change the vote, you bet they're willing to spend a couple million bucks to do it. Nobody's building these kind of systems to protect your vote. Nobody. So what a man in the middle is precisely that introduction. That's a white card charge, but these other things I've talked about, let's talk about the Phuket blew out we had. So this group in Thailand, very clever, had basically added a computer right here called a MIM, a man in the middle, and sometimes they're called kingpins. They're a kingpin if they also send out controls. They're generally just called a man in the middle if they intercept information. Now what happened is they had all of Phuket, where all these people are vacationing, all this information was coming in, and they were basically watching for things that were not cards that they didn't want and not phone calls. This was a very cleverly controlled computer that understood what the transmission signal of a credit card charge looked like, and then would copy the whole thing. And then what they would do is every single card that they wanted, they'd add $100 in charge to a casino, get the chips, and then cash the chips out. So then you come back from your vacation, you know, Mrs. Smith has come back to Long Island, and she gets the bill, and she goes to Mr. Smith and says, what night did you spend $100 at the casino? And he goes, I didn't spend $100 in the casino. You must have spent $100 in the casino. Remember this? She goes, I didn't spend $100. I spent $20. And my $20 charge is here. So then it becomes a question, do Mr. and Mrs. Smith want to call anyone and fight about $100 that they had on vacation that neither of them are really sure if they spent it or not? It was a very clever gang. And they were doing it to 50, 60, 70, 80 cards a day. Right? That's a MIM. Now, let's say instead of wanting to intercept credit card charges, I wanted to change a vote. Well, then I just need to figure out, here's my voting machine out there, and my voting machine has got people who drive it to the county tabulators, but I'm going to erase this and now go to an architecture that's closer. Now that you understand the process of how it happens, let's talk about how voting tends to happen. So we've got all these voting machines out here. This is my polling place. And then the voting machines generally have a human being, not always, but a human being takes them apart and gets a bucket of memory cards, basically. These are my memory cards. And then they physically drive to the county tabulator. And there's basically a series of computers involved now. So at the county, I basically will have a thing. It looks sort of like a printer, but it's got a slot. You stick the card in there. And then there's a reader screen, and then there's some kind of transmission computer, which is usually some old Dell computer or something sitting there. Sorry, Dell, if it's not a Dell computer. But it's whatever county computer they could get that's cheap that has the Windows CE system. So this is the first part of my network. And what they do is they put that in, and it reads the thing, and we look at the results, and then adds it to the total tabulation. Then what happens is it transmits, again, through a local switch into a PBX, into an opto switch, through the optical switch up here, and then back out into a PBX, and back out into a another Dell computer that's at the Secretary of State's office that's the final state tabulation. That's how it happens. Now the question becomes, where would you want the MIM? And back now we're going to go specifically October 2004, Ohio. What I have asserted, and if people think I'm wrong, great, we'll go to discovery. And as I've repeatedly said, if I'm wrong, in my job, I'm wrong 15-20% of the time. Great, I was wrong. I didn't figure out where the thieves were. I admit it. We move on, we fix it. I'm right about 80% of the time, which is why a lot of companies hire me. What it looks like to me happened, and I said this, was that somebody had installed a kingpin, which was taking not just, and now we'll go ahead and change colors here, see if my red pen works today. They were taking a kingpin, and I suggested the kingpin had to be out there. Red's working okay today. So the kingpin, I thought, was probably sitting somewhere in the middle on the high-speed line. And the kingpin is a computer with a person sitting at it that doesn't just steal the information and then they use it later like we saw. It's a person who has on board their kingpin computer the code and instructions for the Secretary of State's office and the code and instructions for a county tabulator. Now, as I said, most of these county tabulators, tons of them, are this extremely poorly designed architectures on relatively old software. It's very well established. There's tons. I mean, you guys can find lots of examples of people who've shown how to hack the code. But I'm not talking about the specific hack. I'm talking about the fact this guy has got copies of the code or has already introduced in these things routines that are communication routines to talk to his kingpin. So then what he does is he sits there, and instead of this happening, this happens.
At this point, Stephen Spoonamore shows the arrows being diverted from the county tabulators to the Secretary of State to the kingpin's computer.
And in addition to that data flow going through there, the control information in red to go back to these can be driven as well. So now what happens is county tabulates everything up, is constantly talking back and forth saying, I've got 10% of my vote. And the kingpin says, wonderful, what's the total? Now, you think you're talking to the Secretary of State, but you're not. You're talking to the kingpin. And then you say, it's this. And the kingpin says, okay, great. And then it passes that to the Secretary of State. So the kingpin doesn't have to make itself seen. It can choose to pass everything through until it decides to say, ah, now I've got a problem. You know, so at 9 o'clock in the evening, Kerry's leading in Ohio. And the kingpin is watching these results go through, and this operator is sitting here at a company called Smart Tech Solutions. We now know. And remember, when I speculated this, everyone said, that's ridiculous, that's completely impossible. Well, we now found out that not only was I right, we know where it was sent. We didn't just have it introduced, it was designed into the Secretary of State's office that they could switch the control from their computer talking to the counties to have a smart tech do it. So, great, I was right. So now, everybody's saying, well, yeah, you were right, we're sending a smart tech, but they didn't do anything wrong. Well, then why were you sending it to them? So these guys at Smart Tech, they're now looking at the things going by, and they finally make a decision. We need more Bush votes. So what they started doing was, in counties where they already knew that it was a Republican county coordinator, they already knew they were going to win the county, they started padding the vote to cover the differences in the place that had been too dangerous, and they would have gotten caught had they done it. So in these places, they were already heavily Republican. They'd probably looked and said, okay, votes have come in from this precinct, and we'll take away 50 Kerry votes and add 50 to Bush and then send it on. And then what's great is we'll then send back to the tabulator and change the tabulator level too, which is very simple to do. If you've ever called up the customer service help desk and all of a sudden watched them changing something inside your computer, you'll go, oh my gosh, how are they doing that? Well, it's because they have the ability to do it if you have the code of what's at both end, which we know the guys at Smart Tech had. So that's how I have repeatedly, first I speculated that's what it was, and then it was discovered in fact that this actual centerpiece existed, and then we found out who owned it, and then we also found out it's also doing Karl Rove's email. Like, that's brilliant. I mean, it's like, I'm humbled that that was that obvious. So, and of course now we'll find out as the case moves along whether or not anyone wants to do anything about it. But, you know, when you're working on a criminal case, and I've worked on tons of criminal cases, do the criminals have the means? Do they have a method? Do they have the motivation? Well, motivation. I want to steal the presidency because it's a really powerful position. Got it. Do I have the method? Well, this was the method I speculated existed when it happened, and everyone said I was out of my mind. Well, we now have all the documentation to prove, yes, actually, the method was set up. And then did they have the means? As it turns out, at 9:32 in the evening on Election Day, October 2004, every county stopped reporting directly to the Secretary of State and sent everything to this kingpin. And the kingpin then decided what was sent in each direction. Bang. In my world of credit cards, which is where I make my living, if I had speculated about this and even had one tiny shred of evidence, sitting across from me would not be fine people like yourself who are documentary filmmakers. I'd have Secret Service and FBI lined up saying, how do we go get them? Because they all get feathers in their caps and get prizes and win. Instead, there seems to be a deafening silence from the Department of Justice on these issues, but they're busy. They're very busy. They're hunting down all kinds of child pornographers, and I mean, there's a lot of other people out there that are bad people. So this is just a low priority. I mean, it's just a democracy, so it's not particularly high priority.
Well, so what do you think happened?
I shouldn't be so flippant, but after 10 years, you get a little flippant about it. I'm really actually quite tired of this entire issue. While there's a lot of people that are kind of cranks arguing about vote fraud, it's like, all I do is electronic security work. And it just so happens that in 2003, I was asked to be the first day, I wasn't initially asked to be the chair, but I was asked to serve on the National Electronic Commerce Coordinating Commission Task Force for state information exchange for state financial exchanges. And this was paid for by the secretaries of states of the United States. They got together and said, if you're going to buy a fishing license online, or if you're going to pay your parking tickets online, a lot of things you can do now, what standards should we have for security to deal with those transmissions? So I was on the task force that's designing this, and then the chairman that had some mups, so they then asked me to chair it. So I became the chair who was setting these standards. So in middle of 2004, we finished these standards, and they're available on the web at the NEC3 site. You can go look at them, and there's what the task force did and our recommendations, and it's great. So then an attorney general goes, okay, we'll follow these standards, and they put that in their contracting, and they hold their contractors to it so you can buy your fishing license online. No voting system passes the standards we set for buying fishing licenses, none. Not one. And then what's even funnier is, that year, the NECCC Secretary of State's conference was in Boston, and Ken Blackwell was there, and I was giving the keynote on electronic financial exchange security based on the report we were then turning in them. So I did a big PowerPoint presentation about the report, and I was like, and Blackwell is there, and at the end of this thing, right, it's like, you know, people exchange business cards, and Mr. Blackwell, I'd like to talk to you about voting security in Ohio, and he goes, this is not the time or place, and I said, if the National Conference of the Secretary of State's Assembly on Electronic Security, with the chairman you hired to work on it, is not the time and place to discuss this, where is? And he turned around and walked away. Wouldn't even broach it. And I've told this story to people, and they're like, oh, really? I go, yeah. I mean, it was the two of us right there. He was shaking hands and working the crowd and doing his thing. But it's like, this is a conference to address these issues, and certainly you trusted me to figure out how to pay for Ohio State fishing licenses. And I'd like to point out, voting machines don't meet the standards of a fishing license.
Or casino.
Or a bank. Certainly they're nowhere near what we do. Credit cards were hundreds of man hours per day in labor, effort, computational systems, analytics, Bayes nets, heuristic diagrams. I mean, we do stuff that none of that exists in voting fraud.
And how effective are you, in fact? Do you stamp out 100% of
it? No. No, on an average day, and unfortunately I've been misquoted a number of times, so I'm gonna make sure it's really clear. A basis point is, there's 100 basis points in a single percent. So some people have said 25, he said 25%, 2.5%. No, 25 basis points, which is 0.25% every day, are either fraudulent or erroneous across an average credit card network. Now, that doesn't mean it was stolen. It means it was not right. Now, with everything that we're doing correctly, that could be a malfunctioning computer. That could be a misset card. That could be a card that has been canceled and should not have been allowed to make a charge. There's lots of things that could be. But that totals, if you have a 25 basis points and you convert it to votes, then that would be 0.25% for one candidate and 0.25%. So even the very best I could do, if someone said to me, Spoon, you have $35 million and a full year to protect the electronic vote in Ohio, which is about what it would take every time, every year, I would say, well, my margin of error will still be 0.5%. And that's doing everything that I can to fix it. That sucks for a vote, because lots of elections, ask Al Franken, come down to, or ask Norm Coleman, either of them, or ask Saxby Chambliss today. Votes come down to less than 0.5% a lot. That is the best you could hope for with a well-defended network, which we do not have. So as a consequence, we end up in a fundamental trap. And I should really frame the fundamental trap that's so important. The fundamental trap in network systems is, you can either have security or you can have anonymity. You can never have both. Now, if you look at the credit card example I showed, the reason we can stop the fraud is we know who you are and who you're supposed to be, and if we need to, we can call you. So if someone takes your information and changes it, we can go back to you as the authority and say, is this correct? And you go, no, arrest them. And I go, great, we're going to go get them. With a vote, we don't know who you are. It's anonymous. So if someone changes it, we don't know whose vote they've changed, and we can't go back and ask. And the problem with data is, data security depends on digital authentication and identity confirmation. So I can confirm that you are who you say you are. I can confirm that the machine is authorized to be making a transaction by the correct course. And then I can, with some degree of assurance, plus or minus 25 basis points now, make sure that it works. In the case of a vote, I don't have authentication. And I don't have identity. So all I got is a bucket of numbers. And I don't know where they came from. And anybody could change them and nobody would know. Especially if you have a man in the middle who's talking to both ends of the computer, so you can make it say anything you want. The one thing you have to confirm against are exit polls. And I think it's fascinating. You guys should follow up, by the way. Have you seen that the Republican Party in Pennsylvania has now filed a suit that they think that the electronic, that somebody's conducted electronic fraud against them in Western Pennsylvania?
No.
I've gotten two calls from friends in the GOP. Last night I had dinner with some of my business partners and some guys, including a guy I hadn't met before. He first walked in and goes, oh, you're the guy causing all the headaches over in Josh Bolton's office in the White House. And I said, I'm not causing headaches. I'm a pretty simple electronic guy, and there's a whole lot of military commands and people who hire me to solve problems for them. I said, why? Because tell them the truth. You can't secure these systems because we don't know the identity of who's doing what. And you don't have the money, the time, or the training, or the expertise to do it in any case, even if you did have identity. But this guy said, he said, and he told me this, he says, yeah, he says, but he actually said, he says, I'd heard about your idea, he says, and I went back and I looked, he says, yeah, you've always just said the same thing. Once the genie's out of the bottle, you have no idea who's going to control it. And I go, right. And as of yesterday, security group out of Chicago, very good guys, were retained by a bunch of Republicans in Pennsylvania who all these solid Republican districts that have always elected Senate and House people on the state level, all of a sudden were swept by Democrats. And I'm like, yeah, on paperless touchscreen machines, and trust me, you're not going to be able to prove anything. Because it's a genie, you can't control it. If there were a paper ballot, you could go back and count it. But you can't.
And so do they suspect that because of exit polls?
Yes. Yes, the Republicans are asserting that the exit polls don't match the vote count on these touchscreen machines, and someone must have hacked the machines. I'm like, I absolutely, and I even, the one guy called me, I said, if you would like me to come testify on your behalf, the answer is yes, and welcome to the party. I said, I've been saying this, and my fear, my deepest fear, and now we've got this situation, I mean, you know, I've worked with the Chinese government. I've worked with the Russians. I've worked with the Israelis. I've worked with the French. But guess what? They all hack us, and we hack them. It's like we're in electronic, not exactly war, but we're certainly in electronic, vicious competition with each other. I'm terrified of the idea that China's going to pick the president or Israel's going to make a decision, nah, I don't want Obama not to be able to stop a filibuster because I've got AIPAC can control a few of those people. I'm going to make sure that there's 40 Republican senators. And now you've got the situation in Georgia and Alaska. I don't believe those two results at all. There's all, basically, we've had a 12% fewer voters at the polls. Alaska's had the smallest turnout since 1940 when Sarah Palin, their home governor, I don't believe it. I just don't believe the numbers. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's true. Maybe only the fewest number of Alaskans since 1941 go to the poll. But I don't believe it. And if you don't believe your own vote when you're a citizen and a patriot, well, then you sit there going, well, you know, what do you do about it? And it's not a theory that a foreign government can hack our IT systems. I have personally worked on hacks at the Commerce Department, at the DOD, attacks on the Secret Service, attacks on the intelligence community, attacks on more than 20 of my banking clients, all from foreign national parties. And guess what? Sometimes they got in. And that's been in the press. Voting machines are horribly insecure. Could China decide a U.S. presidential election? Absolutely. Could Israel? Absolutely. Could Romania? Absolutely. Could a really good gang of Brazilian high school kids? Absolutely. That's how easy it is. By the way, the Brazilians, one of the best data security organizations out there is the Church of Scientology. Because they are paranoid and crazy and have all this stuff. And basically, there's this group of Brazilian kids who can't stand the Scientologists. And as you may know, all this stuff KQ's being published on the web, because they keep hacking their systems to steal their data, and they also post all these inflammatory things inside their networks. So this is a bunch of Brazilian kids who do it for fun against an organization that has hundreds of full-time IT people trying to stop the Brazilian kids. Could the Brazilian kids, if they suddenly say, you know something? I think that Carmen Miranda would be a wonderful write-in candidate. It's like, trust me, they could do it. It would not be difficult to pull off. They obviously, no one would believe that result. So, but you could do it technically.
Well, you make me wonder because just today we were reading the article. It's in Newsweek right now, and also on Ajans.
Israel hacking the campaigns.
Was it Israel?
Oh, of course it was. Israel hacks all the campaigns. It may have been China as well, but there may be multiple cases. I don't know the specifics of that one, but
Right, to determine foreign policy.
And they want to know where people are going on Israel. There are little tiny things surrounded by a bunch of hostile people. They want to know in advance, and they want to get their lobbyists in the door early. You bet. They do it to everybody.
A minute ago, you mentioned Josh Bolton. Now, what's the connection there?
Can you talk about that?
Oh, well, I have ruffled feathers in a number of departments and all the way up to the White House because I keep on this issue. And they're like, in public, what they'll say is, you know, we respect the vote and the people out there doing a great job, but I'm sure behind closed doors, they're like, you know, it's fairly, there's people that are, I consider people like Brad DeLong, the patriots and moderates, that they can paint him over on the left. It's harder with me because, you know, on one week, I'm addressing the Special Operations Command on Follow the Money solutions. And it's like, they can't really say, you know, well, he's just one of those lefties. It's like, no, actually, I'm pro-genocide in some cases because there's really evil people in the world and you should go hunt them down and kill them. And I'm fine with that. If people go ahead and break the social bound, go get them. And if you're going to hack a vote, then that means you're coming after my democracy and then I'm coming after you. And I don't care who you are. Great. You may have bigger guns today, and, you know, and there's a number of people who said, you know, don't get hit by a bus. And, oh, you got to die of something. I mean, you think about what people went through to build this country. You think about Valley Forge. You think about what my ancestors were. My grandfather served in northern India as a special attachment during World War II. He was behind enemy lines with the Japanese after they swept down to us for 3 years with no communication coming out. Why? So he could keep the material and information flow for a certain sector going. You know, you hear about these stories of what these guys went through. I live in a beautiful home. I have no problems. I've got an apartment in D.C. I travel the world. I'm treated very well by my clients and friends. To step up and say, this is wrong and it's harming my country, it's fine. Great. And no one's shooting at me, at least not yet. And people have said some nasty things. I've been pulled from contracts. On two different occasions, I've had people say, you know, we've gotten a call and we can't work with you because you're so out front on this issue. Oh, yeah, sure. That's the way this White House has functioned, or the way the outgoing White House has functioned. I mean, I'm not Valerie Plame or Joe Wilson. I mean, they took it much harder than I certainly have. A lot of people took it much harder than I have. And the truth of the matter is, I'm not embarrassed and I'm not ashamed. I said from the beginning, great, take all of my contracts. I don't care. I'll go build computers at a university because they'll think, God, we got a guy 10 times better than we could afford. It's like, that's fine. I don't want to live in a country where I don't believe the vote. I've traveled. I've built systems in 50 countries around the world, and I've been sent to work in some pretty unpleasant places. And I don't want to live in one. I want to live in a democracy. I want to live in a democracy where the citizens respect each other. And the most important thing is when we have a vote, I don't care if my party loses. I don't. I care that I live in a place where I have a vote that counts. Patriot, way first. A loyal person to my friends and family and beliefs, second. And very distantly, I'm the member of a political party. So, yes, I'm a lifetime member of the GOP, but should the GOP take precedence over my nation? No. Should they take precedence over my family? No. Should they take precedence over my religious beliefs and my church? No. Do they take precedence over the Constitution? They're not even mentioned in the Constitution. It's like, those are the things that should come first. And if they are not coming first, and in not coming first, we are choosing to compromise our vote. I mean, most of the Constitution actually talks about how you run an election. If you actually read it, it assigns the positions and then assigns how they're elected in enormous detail. It spends more time on that than anything else. Whether or not you like the solution, Electoral College, it thought it through and it created this system to say, we don't know what decisions you're going to make, but let's make sure that we're all in agreement on how we're going to make it and that we all believe it. We don't want another dictator. We don't want a king. We want to have a democracy. And I'm more than happy to spend my time and money and reputation, which I certainly have spent a lot of each, on this issue. And I'm right. And I will win. And everybody who is bad will go down.
Okay, that was Stephen Spoodamore, IT expert to the stars, the major banks, the U.S. military, among other major league players in the world. A big thanks to the Velvet Revolution. You can Google them and find out more about them for providing the material for the show today. I've been your host, John Barkhausen, and thank you all for listening, and please tune in again next week for another edition of Politics and Science. Democracy is coming to the USA.